from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, there's a deadline looming. By Wednesday at midnight, all of the Senate bills must be reported to the House and all the House bills reported to the Senate. It makes for long lists of legislation to be considered on both floors. The House today passed a bill that keeps the Future Fund, an account created by Democrats last year, unfunded. And we'll talk about the state budget with the executive director of the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Over the weekend, members of the State House of Delegates spent hours debating a bill they ultimately approved. House Bill 2934 would repeal Common Core standards in math and English in West Virginia schools. This morning, some members of the Senate began to hear testimony about the controversial bill that education officials say could cost the state millions.
So I came here to tell you firsthand what is wrong with Common Core and tell you that it should be repealed completely.
Canova Elementary School fifth grader Kaylin Markham stood before the Senate Education Committee and pleaded they repeal the standards she says are causing her frustration in school and preventing her parents from helping her with homework. Laura Kimball, a mother of three from Bridgeport, did the same, saying the new progression of courses, particularly in math, aren't clear enough for parents to understand. Instead of taking algebra, geometry, and calculus, Kimball says her children are taking math 1, 2, and 3, and she doesn't know what's contained in those courses.
If you're not in education, as some of the professionals here are, you have to figure out what is best for your child. You are the parent.
Kimball and Markham were just two of the many that came before the committee to speak against the Common Core standards and ask for a repeal. The bill passed the House with bipartisan support, but only Republican sponsors attended the Senate meeting to speak in favor of the bill. Delegates Jim Butler and Mark Moffitt say Common Core is a national education standard being forced on West Virginia to keep federal funding for schools, and they want out of it. But newly appointed State Board of Education member Beverly Kingery says the delegates are wrong. She was the superintendent of Nicholas County Schools when the Common Core was adopted in 2010 and sent her teachers to work groups where they and hundreds of other West Virginia teachers made changes and adapted the standards to West Virginia's education system. Those teachers created the next generation content standards that are in place in West Virginia schools today.
Contrary to what has been said here this morning, West Virginia teachers spent thousands of hours and hundreds of West Virginia teachers to develop these standards. So this was not something that somebody sent to us and said, because I know I had teachers from my county, Nicholas County, that served on those committees.
Christine Campbell, head of the American Federation of Teachers West Virginia chapter, also spoke against repeal. Campbell says since Saturday's vote in the House, she's heard from dozens of teachers, curriculum coaches, and college professors across the state who say these standards are working.
We're really moving in the right direction, and we have to have the time to do this. If we stop what we're doing and start from scratch, all the materials that we've developed, all the things that have been aligned to the Common Core, all the subjects that have been aligned to the Common Core, the tests that have been aligned to the Common Core, the next gen standards that we have in West Virginia. We even have the SATs are being aligned to national standards. And if we go back, we're going to be starting from scratch and we're going to set the state back at least 5 to 7 years.
Campbell says instead of a repeal, the state should be focusing on professional development and assuring all teachers are prepared to teach to the more rigorous standards. But understanding the standards themselves are where a major part of the contention lies. State Superintendent of Schools Dr. Michael Martirano says standards are the things a student should be able to do and know at the end of a certain grade level or course. He says he understands the concerns students and parents shared at the meeting, but says the state can make improvements to aid in their struggles.
One of our roles is to make certain we're educating our young people to the highest level so that they're college and career ready, but also to assist the parent in that delivery model. One of the things that we can do better is provide more resources for our parents to assist children who are struggling with the concepts and understanding how to do those. Providing the resources to our teachers, it's about education of all of our individuals to make certain that our students are being fully educated.
The bill itself comes with a $113 million fiscal note. Martirano says those funds would be necessary to create and buy new classroom materials for professional development and many, many other things necessary to create new content standards. Senator Donna Boley is the Republican who has spearheaded the Common Core repeal in the upper chamber. She questioned the superintendent.
I'm concerned that from our hour-long talk that you didn't understand what part of the Common Core that we were concerned about. And that had to do with the math.
Correct.
And these are minimum standards that we have been given. They're not rigorous. They've not been internationally benchmarked. They're minimum standards that we're to go by.
Martirano joined the State Department in September and says he's working to ensure that these standards are going to improve the quality of education in the state, but says he hasn't had time to do it yet. Martirano asked the committee to let calmer minds prevail and give him more time.
I am doing a very intensive review of our educational delivery model. I have come here with expectations from our citizens, from our elected officials, to do certain things to improve our educational system. I need the opportunity to dig in deep to those levels of standards and understand where those concerns are.
The bill was placed in an education subcommittee for further discussion, chaired by Senator Boley. The committee also includes Senator Robert Carnes and Senator Bill Laird and will hold their first meeting tomorrow. As we enter the last 2 weeks of this legislative session, both chambers are pushing through large quantities of bills before time runs out. And today in the House, 14 bills were passed. Of those, lawmakers approved a piece of legislation that attempts to tackle the issue of truancy in West Virginia schools. It would extend the number of unexcused absences a student can have before the court system intervenes. But first, Liz McCormick details two other bills approved by delegates today.
House Bill 2395, or the Storm Scammer Consumer Protection Act, provides consumers with the right to cancel residential roofing contracts, where the contract is expected to be paid from a property and casualty insurance policy. Delegate John Schott of Mercer County and the Judiciary Chair further explained the bill.
The problem this bill seeks to address is that following a significant storm, some disreputable roofing contractors, mostly from out of state, will approach a homeowner and tell them that if they sign their contract, the contractor will work with the home insurance carriers to pay for the homeowner's roof repairs or replacement. However, if the insurance company does not approve the claim or will not cover the entire cost, the homeowner is contractually responsible to pay for the repairs. This bill prohibits a contractor from requiring advance payments on a contract made prior to the determination of insurance company until after the 5-day right to cancel has expired.
House Bill 2395 passed 93-4. Another bill that passed was House Bill 2485, which relates to the West Virginia Future Fund. This fund started in the 2014 legislative session by then-Senate President Jeff Kessler, along with other Democrats. The Future Fund was meant to set aside revenue from the natural gas boom so that the state would have a savings account with plenty of money in it after the boom was over. But Republicans had some major problems with it. House Bill 2485 seeks to amend the West Virginia Future Fund by prohibiting deposits into it during years when certain state retirement systems are not funded to 90% or more of their actuarial accrued liabilities. Delegate Michael Folk of Berkeley County was the lead sponsor of the bill.
You know, last year I proposed a similar amendment to the Future Fund bill when it came before us. And I believe all you have to do is simply look at the unfunded liabilities. For teachers' retirement, currently, $3.4 billion underfunded. For public employees, over $1 billion. You just take the two biggest ones right there, and you're at almost $4.5 billion. I think we should fund our current commitments before we make contributions to what they call the future fund.
House Bill 2485 passed 76-21. Currently at public schools in West Virginia, a student has up to 5 days of unexcused absences before a parent or guardian is called and action is taken up before a magistrate. House Bill 2550 seeks to increase that amount from 5 to 10 before this type of complaint would need to be made. Delegate Linda Phillips of Wyoming County is a retired elementary school teacher, and she opposed the bill because she felt like the extension was only going to encourage more absences from students.
Good parents might be called in for a conference because your child has missed 5 days and you wrote a parent note. But I think that in education, that's not who we're trying to get. Those are not the children we're trying to get in school. We're trying to get in school those students whose parents don't care whether they come to school or not, or they don't send them and they don't care what the excuse is. I think that I'm going to vote against this because I think that we're trying to get our students in school, and I think that this might not be the way that we need to go about it.
Delegate Stephen Skinner of Jefferson County supported the bill because he says the extension will give students in unfortunate situations a chance to get back in school before their record would be blemished by the juvenile justice system.
This is a very important piece to being thoughtful about how we deal with kids who sometimes the reason why they aren't making it to school is because they live at the end of a dirt road and they can't make it to the school bus in bad weather, or the parents' transportation isn't working, or the parents have a drug problem, or there's domestic violence, and the focus of that household isn't about getting the kid to school. So we set them up for being referred into the juvenile justice system, not because they're bad kids, but because of circumstances in their life. We still have the law, we still are gonna have truant kids. This just gives an extra 5 days. And I think that one of the things that we're going to see, when those numbers exploded after we changed the law to 5 days, we're going to see those numbers go down.
Delegate Darrell Coles of Morgan County and the majority leader agreed with Skinner.
I agree with everything my friend from the 67th just said. He even said, used the term exploded. Exploded is what did happen to status offenses that the state of West Virginia would use to move kids out of the home or punish kids when they missed too many days of school. The bill before you, and that was a result of us overreaching by lowering the unexcused days from 10 down to 5. Whenever you have a young person that's struggling, real world, real life, young person struggling, we can go one of two ways. We can punish or we can help. I think this is an effort to help before we punish.
House Bill 2550 passed 95-2. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Coming up, an analysis of some of the issues at this legislative session from the head of the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow.
Among the bills up for passage, Senate Bill 234 to exempt water and sewer utilities owned by counties or municipalities from Public Service Commission jurisdiction. Senate Bill 310 to exempt nonprofit public utility companies from the West Virginia Business and Occupation Tax. Senate Bill 550 to authorize county commissions and municipalities to cooperate and enter into agreements removing or demolishing dwellings or buildings unfit for human habitation. Senate Bill 581 to place the courtesy patrol that assists citizen and visitor motorists in the Division of Highways and to use money in the courtesy patrol fund to promote tourism. And House Bill 2157 to make absentee ballot fraud a felony. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 352, including a recycling service under the scope of cooperative associations, and Senate Bill 385, to regulate transportation network companies such as Uber and Lyft and exempt them from oversight by the Public Service Commission, which regulates taxi services.
No matter what happens during the 60-day legislative session, members of both the House and Senate are constitutionally required to do one thing: balance the budget. And this year's budget, like many in the recent past, will be anything but easy to balance. Here this evening to discuss a recent report analyzing Governor Tomlin's proposed budget for fiscal year 2016 is Ted Bettner. He's the executive director of the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy and one of the authors of the report. Ted, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ashton. Appreciate being here.
This report is the governor's 2016 budget: more austerity, less prosperity. What are some of the key findings? How is Governor Tomlin proposing to balance this year's budget?
Well, they have a gap of about $195 million this year they're trying to close, and they do a number of things. One of them is tap the rainy day fund for about $25 million, and one was to lessen the amount of money that they put into the teachers' retirement system because of increases in the investment return over this last year. Another ones were to make about $77 million in budget cuts. Some of that was not so bad because it actually had to do with our declining student population. But some of it did hurt. Some of it, we continue for the third year in a row to cut higher education. We're also looking at some statutory changes. You know, you mentioned earlier that the state has to constitutionally balance its budget every year, but the governor doesn't have to present a balanced budget. And what he does sometimes is say, here are the revenues, here's the gap, and here are also about 15 bills that we would like the legislature to pass in order to make those numbers add up. And that's what he's done this year. He's been looking for these one-time areas and statutory changes, whether it's taking money from the Port Authority or taking money from the Infrastructure Fund and redirecting those funds in order to balance out the budget. And what it reflects to us is that we have a structural budget problem, a structural deficit, where ongoing expenses and ongoing revenues aren't meeting each other. And we need to take proactive stances to deal with that structural deficit problem. And this budget doesn't do that. It sort of kicks the can down the road and doesn't make the investments that we need to be making in our children and human and physical capital, like our transportation system, research and development, whether it's broadband, a whole host of things that we need to be making more investments in to create a strong economy that we're not doing this year because we continue to have a revenue problem.
Let's talk about some of the places where the governor is proposing cuts. More than $70 million in cuts, and some of those are from higher education. Like you said, the Center on Budget and Policy takes these things and then moves them forward. So what is the outcome? If we continue to cut higher education, what does that mean for higher education in West Virginia in the future?
Well, ultimately, it makes college less affordable and ends up piling debt on the backs of our students. And, you know, West Virginia, I don't have to tell you that we rank last in the country in the share of people age 25 and older that have a bachelor's degree or higher. And that's the number one thing businesses look for in order to expand or relocate is, do you have a really educated workforce? And that's been our persistent problem. And unfortunately, over the last couple of years, these cuts in higher education are making that worse. Just recently, WVU increased their tuition by 8.5% this fall. That sends a signal to a lot of people that they can't afford to go on to college, and they don't. We're seeing the rates decrease. And one of the ways that we were able to save money in our budget this year is because student enrollment in our K-12 system is down, so that means less money has to go to counties through the school aid formula, which is a good thing for the budget side of point of view, but as our state, are we growing our state? Are we attracting more people here to live, work, and raise a family? When we see student enrollment go down, that's not a really good thing. You know, it saves us money in the in this term. So these one-time cuts and not dealing with our revenue problem is really starting to show in our budget. This year, this is the first year that our budget this year is actually projected to be less than it was last year. And by not making those investments, we really have shortchanged the future of so many people in West Virginia. You know, one in four children in this state, children live in poverty. We have huge problems with obesity in this state. We have a very unhealthy population. We rank last in labor force participation. Only half of the people in this state, mostly because they're older, work. you know, we should be trying to figure out how to solve those problems. And part of that answer is making sure kids graduate from high school and go on to college. And right now we're making that much more difficult by cutting higher education.
Another area that the governor cut last year, and we saw the legislature come back in a bipartisan way and respond to, were some family and social services, things like family resource networks, child advocacy groups. They all got cuts. Is the governor looking once again to those groups to help balance the budget?
Well, this year he initially cut about $1 million out of some family support programs like domestic violence and home family education. Child abuse programs, and those were restored during a special session last year. And what the governor has done is gone back to his original proposal. So in addition, they are cuts from what was put in by the legislature this year. Outside of in-home family education, he is increasing a little bit, but those cuts right now remain. And the big question is, what is the legislature going to do about it? With only 2 weeks going to the end of the session, they're going to be taking up the budget very soon. It's a question whether they're going to be able to do that without an extended session and how they're going to be able to bring all of this together.
You mentioned a lack of revenues as being one of the long-term budget hardships. We saw this year an introduction of a tobacco tax increase, a spirits tax increase, but they haven't gone anywhere. But in the recent past, we've had some tax cuts that have put us in the position that we're in today. Can you go back for us? How did we get here? What did we cut to get the budget in the shape that it's in?
Yeah, over the back in 2006, 2007, we made a number of major, we had a major overhaul of our tax system when Governor Manchin was here. And they made some pretty big decisions that we pointed out at the time that were going to lead to these things that we're seeing today. They made about $425 million per year in annual cuts this year. And about half of that is coming from business tax cuts. And another half is coming from the grocery tax repeal. I'm not a big fan of the grocery tax either, but when you don't replace that revenue and make corresponding cuts, you end up having major budget problems down the road. And that's exactly what we're seeing. Those cuts, those tax cuts were phased in over a couple of years, and we're dealing with that reality today. And to just give you an idea, in West Virginia, if we wanted to have free tuition at our 2 and 4 year public schools, all of our college, our community colleges, and all of our 4 year public higher education institutions, we could do that for about the same cost as the business tax cuts or the repeal of the grocery tax. And I think if you asked people and said, hey, do we want to be the only state in the country that makes higher education such a priority that we're willing to offer free tuition, I think most people would say, yeah, that would be great. That makes our state a great place to live, work, and raise a family. And these are policy choices that we need to confront and look at. What is the best choice for West Virginia? And that's exactly what the budget is. It's filled with over 12,000 individual choices about how we're going to pay for the important public services like higher education and our transportation system and our important safety net programs. And these tax cuts have had a really negative effect on that, because they've created a huge revenue problem, and every single year we're coming back, oh, it's a tight budget year this year, we're not going to be able to do this and that. Well, this was foreseen, what we talked about a long time ago. It'll sound like Cassandra here, but we pointed that out a while back. You're going to have to deal with these issues down the road, and that means tapping your rainy day fund and also cutting services.
Okay. Well, Ted Bettner with the Center on Budget and Policy, thanks so much for coming to discuss the budget. I'm sure we'll look to you again for help in the future.
Anytime, Ashton. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Now here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow.
Among the bills up for passage, Senate Bill 294, the governor's bill to eliminate certain committees and boards. Senate Bill 343, exempting chiropractors from a continuing education requirement on mental conditions of veterans. Senate Bill 435, creating the West Virginia Sheriff's Bureau of Professional Standards. House Bill 2015, requiring the legislative auditor to conduct performance reviews and audits for every government agency, including those in the Board of Public Works and the legislature. House Bill 2377, authorizing the State Board of Education to approve alternatives to instructional time. House Bill 2466, exempting valid nonprofit organizations from ABCA licensing requirements for certain events. House Bill 2502, allowing security officers to carry deadly weapons on school buses and educational facilities. House Bill 2515, relating to the restoration of elk. House Bill 2840, to allow county boards of education to post lessons on the internet to make up lost instructional days. House Bill 2878, to require the Secretary of State to create a single electronic business portal that individuals and businesses can use to complete and file forms, pay taxes and fees, and learn about the requirements for doing business in West Virginia. House Bill 2999, relating to facilities that care for infants who are born addicted to drugs. And House Bill 3017, requiring the Secondary Schools Activities Commission to inform and educate appropriate school administrators, coaches, interscholastic athletes, and their parents or guardians about the nature and warning signs of sudden cardiac arrest.
This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org.